Thursday night. Oh, so much happening. Such a great evening, and I'm happy that you are joining us. Hope you are happy and healthy, safe, wherever you are. And I know that some of you, it's getting close to bedtime, or you're hoping that you fall asleep. And I want to remind you that if you do need to drift off, don't stay awake because you're like, oh, this is so interesting. I mean, I want you to be interested. I want you to be engaged. I want you to call us or text us at 312-981-7200 when you want to jump in, because this is your conversation. Don't hang back. But should you drift off or have to get out of your car, don't forget everything is podcast on iTunes and at WGN Radio as soon as we are almost, as soon as we're off the air. Before I leave the building, Michael Heidemann has this done faster than I can get in my car. So don't forget to check in and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And if you like our page, Patty V Show page, you can see that he posts that right there as soon as it's up. You can see the picture of the guests that we have in studio and stay up to date on what's going on with our show. It is getting cold tonight. This is a very chilly, very cold evening. A friend of mine in Michigan said that they already saw snowflakes, and we're supposed to have a little bit of snow tomorrow, which means in my house, I have to make a pot of chili. Whenever there's a first snowfall, that means it's time to make chili in my house. But as I am on day three of eating soup, so.
How much soup do you make? Like, the broccoli soup. There still leftovers?
Yes,
or?
Yes, there was. I used two big heads of broccoli, and then there was a small onion, some celery, and then all the liquids that go into that. I added about 4 cups of broth to it. So, and that was, it was a veggie broth, by the way. I didn't even realize till after I used it that it was
no,
completely, it would have been vegan had I not thrown in that quarter cup of cream just to
do coconut milk next time.
I could have done it without it. Although someone told me last night, Dr. Tynes was telling us that she uses sour cream instead in her soups. Do you ever use sour cream in those cream based soups?
I'll do cream. Cream or coconut milk, honestly.
Ooh, how's the coconut milk taste?
I enjoy it. It gives it a different twist.
Yeah.
On certain things. Almost you get kind of a Indian flavor just because a lot of Indian dishes have coconut milk. So yeah. You kind of get that.
I wonder how almond milk would be in that too, with a little bit of nuttiness, right?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm thinking coconut milk in a can.
Ah, I see. So it's a little bit thicker.
Because it's thicker, yeah.
Yes. It's not that really kind of watery stuff you get in those.
Yeah, that's coconut cartons. Beverage.
Oh, I see. Oh, so
coconut. I realized, at least in Trader Joe's, they call it coconut beverage.
Is that what it's called on the packaging?
Yeah.
Beverage.
Yeah.
Okay. Coconut milk beverage.
But if you get the canned stuff, that's coconut milk.
That makes sense. All right, I will try that one day. I made Brussels sprout soup on Tuesday. Last night I made broccoli soup. But tonight I was out and about and had to run some errands, and I ended up at a ramen shop over on Belmont as
I think Strings?
No, I think it's Furious. Called like no. I don't know where Strings is. It's Broadway. It's on Belmont, just west of Broadway. So Broadway and Belmont, like kitty corner from the Laugh Factory. So it's next to the Chicken Hut, which is
just, that's new.
It is new. And I want to say that it was one of the best ramen soups I've had in Chicago. And I've been to Furious Spoon. I like it. A little salty. I like Slurping Turtle, but this place was good.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest. I've started to not become the biggest fan of Furious Spoon.
It's too salty.
Sadly enough.
Well, it's also like, for me, I go when it's way too late. And a lot of people have been out partying. So when you're out by yourself, like just trying to enjoy a bowl of ramen and everyone else is like trying to sober up, it's you're at a different pace than
they
everybody
also
else.
I think they charge you for an egg.
Well, so did this joint. I think it was $1 for an egg. I think
there's a couple places where it's just included in the soup.
Part of the menu.
Yeah, it's just part of it.
This one was $12.95 plus $1 for the egg.
Okay. You should try Strings.
Strings?
Next time. And which is, it's a few doors down from the Red Line on Belmont.
On Belmont.
It's east of the Red Line.
Okay. I could do that.
It's a little tiny shop. It's adorable. There's one there and then one in Chinatown.
I will look for that. Strings. Okay. That's a new destination for me. But this was, and by the way, it was the first place I'd ever seen Perrier that was strawberry or watermelon flavored, which I was surprised
Interesting.
By. I enjoyed the watermelon. It was a lovely day. So day three of soup. Apparently tomorrow is, here's an important question for everybody. 312-981-7200. Is chili soup?
No.
No, I did not think. Well,
unless you make it really soupy, which I am not a fan of soupy chili.
I need it to be rich.
Yeah, you have to be able to get a cracker and just almost like dip.
Or the tortilla chip.
Yeah, just anything where it's, and if it's watery, no.
Yeah, no. No, then it's soup.
Someone made that once. And they're like, here's my chili. And I was like, this is not chili.
You know what it helps? If you can put it on a hot dog safely.
Yes. There you go.
That makes a chili.
That's perfect.
All right. 312-981-7200 is chili soup. And what do you put on your chili? Because I want to know. I want to see what everybody's toppings are. 312-981-7200. I'm making a pot tonight. Not for everybody. I wish I could make a pot of soup for a chili for everybody. But, for some reason, I'm on a big stew, soup, and chili kick. I want comfort food. I feel like I need to be comforted. A lot going on in the world. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me riding sidecar tonight is comedian James Vickery, fresh off the stage at Zanies and Rosemont. Are you at Zanies and Rosemont all weekend?
I am.
Fantastic. Hi. And who are you with?
Tonight and tomorrow, Mike Toomey.
Oh, wonderful.
Love Mike Toomey. And then Jake Johansson.
That's a great weekend of comedy. You have to go every single show then. I'm sorry, everybody. You can't just pick one night.
No, absolutely.
Mike Toomey, who you recognize from the morning WGN morning news team.
Yep.
And Jake Johansson, over 40 appearances on the David Letterman show.
Really?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Wow. You didn't know that? Google it.
I didn't.
Google it.
I believe
it's a true
you.
True story. Jake is one of the truly kind, generous human, not just comics, but one of the most kind, generous
really
human
is.
Beings on the planet. There was a night, Dobie Maxwell.
Yes.
We were all showcasing for Eddie Brill, who is the booker
yep.
for the David Letterman show. And Dobie goes up and just kills, destroys, mm-hmm. rips the room to shreds. High energy
yeah.
and just keeps pounding them. And I went up there and just ate it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough 6 minutes. It was just constantly trying to just like dig myself out of that hole. I think I kind of had them at the end.
Yeah.
And when I came off the stage, Jake said, if Eddie didn't see what you were doing, he's a fool.
Aww.
You know, he said that that should stand on its own regardless of what the audience reacted.
A great thing to say.
It was really kind. And of course, Eddie didn't. Eddie would do this thing where he would say, did you ever have a chance?
I did showcase for him for.
Do you remember when he would say, like, if you want to talk to me about your act, come see me afterwards? You know,
he didn't say that to me.
Yeah, he would. Yeah. See, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah. See.
Right. So. That never made me comfortable. Like,
no.
I don't like to be told, like, I don't like, I mean, like, to me, that seemed like.
I don't like that. Just say yes or no.
Right, right. And he, what he told somebody else was, I guess she doesn't find my opinion worthwhile. But I, having been in the business long enough, and this kind of pertains to the comedy world and some things that are coming out today
yep.
and in the last few weeks, it always sounded to me like the bookers who said, you know, do this for me and then maybe I'll help you out. And, you know, and when I was young, I did some stupid things. I'm not saying that I didn't make bad choices
if
or put myself.
Someone's definitely like helping you, like,
yeah.
hey, you know, consider this, right?
Right. What, you know, I mean, like, or email me and say, hey,
yeah.
you know, that material you did was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Or give me a call. You have the club's own, but like
yep.
to say, I need to meet you afterwards alone always
yeah.
icked me out. Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
No, I was never.
And he may not, it may have been completely
right, of course.
Innocuous.
Either way, I don't like it.
It was very strange. But for me, Jake
In
Johansson
general.
Saying, you know, that should stand on its own, regardless what the material should stand on its own, was buoyed my, you know, my self-esteem. It helped me out.
I hosted at the Vernon Hill Zanies when it was open, and Jake was the headliner, and it was really crowded. A lot of people came to see him, so there was nowhere to really watch or anything. So I finished my set, and he was about to go on, and he said to me, he's like, hey, good job. You know, I didn't get to hear it, but I heard the audible sounds of enjoyment.
That's lovely.
I loved it. Yeah.
I really love that. We'll talk a little bit more about the world of comedy after the news, because there's a couple of stories that came out today that I think
yes.
are interesting. But before we do that, I don't want to abandon our conversation that you may not have heard on your way up from the car.
I didn't.
It's very cold out, and I don't think I have I don't think I have seasonal depression, like that disorder, but I'm not feeling great this week.
I know.
I don't feel sick. I just don't feel happy.
I said this on stage tonight because I realized it's like, what is all of a sudden the time change? We're like, well, 5:30, time for bed. I don't know.
Maybe
like,
that it gets dark so early.
Yeah.
So I've been eating soup every day, James.
Mm.
I cannot stop eating soup. I made a cream of broccoli soup last night, cream of Brussels sprout soup on Tuesday, and today I had ramen. And
wow.
I'm planning to make chili tomorrow, which Esmeralda, I think, very clearly and distinctly and succinctly said that does not count as soup, and I have to agree with her. Unless it's runny, and then it's gross.
I agree with her.
Yes. I think you're absolutely right. Then it's just like bean soup with meat in it.
I had chicken soup today.
See?
That my mom made for me. Isn't that
sweet? Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love that. My mom makes the best chicken soup. And it's like the big chicken. Is this, where's your mom from originally?
Poland.
From Poland. Yeah. Does your mom, because I'm going to go ahead and assume that your parents make the chicken soup Esmeralda with the huge, I mean, like, it's a half a carrot. Like, could you just put some carrot slices in there? Do I have to be able to see that it just came out of the ground? Could you slice that up a little bit? But it's like quartered carrots.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's
chicken soup. Yeah.
Well, that's celery. we do a beef.
Oh, with the beef? Yes.
It's a beef soup that I hated as a kid.
And how about now?
It's more like it's just kind of like a broth with just big vegetables.
Yes.
It's hunks of beef.
My mom, but hers is really good. And then you know what? For me, you have to, for the chicken soup, you have to put lemon in it. That's the best.
Well, lime.
I like lime.
Yes, lime's good too. Yep. Lime. Lime is
a little hot sauce and lime.
Boom.
My dad makes the chicken soup, but he puts butter at the end.
At the end of the soup?
Try it. It makes it like this nice creamy, but not creamy. If it's a broth, you just throw in a little butter and it just, the fat content makes it.
Here's
nice.
The thing.
I think you could say that about literally anything, probably.
Well, and here's the thing about Esmeralda's tips. Always right.
I believe.
Right?
Yes.
And this is my dad. My dad does it all the time.
Ask Es about how to reheat pizza. This is the best thing ever.
Wait, I think, Thin crust pizza. Guess?
Yes.
Is it on the pant? Like you cover it? Yeah.
Were you here before when she said that?
No, but.
It's everywhere.
I did not know this.
I didn't invent it or anything.
Freddy's Pizza in Cicero, the owner, gave me that tip a few years ago.
And it's so, but it's amazingly true. I won't reheat my pizza any other way now.
No, I won't even watch someone do it another way. I will leave the room.
I almost wish I had day-old pizza just to try it again. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I realized that, as per usual, I gave you a half thought. And usually, I mean, a lot of listeners are like, oh, there's Patty. She didn't finish that thought. But this time, you're absolutely right. I did not complete the story about how Esmeralda and James Vickery reheat thin crust pizza. Who would like to take it away? Because Nick got it. I mean, James got it from
The owner of Freddy's in Cicero, which is a great place, by the way.
And Esmeralda, where did you learn your...
The internet.
From the... I feel like you should, I feel Es, because you have shared the story before, and I feel as though I didn't do you full homage to your story and your rendering of it. Please let us know how you reheat your pizza.
So what you get a pan, and you have to eat only thin crust. You can't do this with a deep dish. It's not going to work. A little oil in the pan. Put the pizza in, fry it up for a little bit. Let it get, I usually let it burn a little bit, but that's just my preference. Just get a little browned.
Okay.
And then pour a little water in. Cover it and just let it go probably 5 minutes or so. You got to watch it to see if the cheese is melting, because that's just what you're doing that for.
Right.
When it comes out, it's going to be crispy, melty on top, and sometimes even better than when you first ate it.
She's not wrong.
She's right. Although I didn't do the water thing.
Yeah, you need a little bit, just a little bit of water to get the steam going.
For the melted cheese.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is your feeling on cold pizza?
I do cold pizza, but now that I've got this solution, it's so easy to do.
And then you don't heat up your house if you're putting it in the oven in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like cold pizza only because I don't like congealed cheese.
Yes. It depends. Like, here's what I do. I eat a piece of cold pizza while I'm reheating another one.
That's exactly right.
I mean, sometimes it's good, but for me, I'm not.
I don't have
fan
six
of that
minutes
cheese.
Here. I'm hungry.
I mean, come on. I mean,
why? You need a snack.
Yeah, it's just I'm just being practical about the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like when I get McDonald's and I take it home. I have a walking hash brown.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
But then you have one, so when you can eat, because
with the rest of the meal,
exactly,
it's a compliment to the rest of the meal.
I do that with like every 6 weeks or so, 2 months, I get White Castle.
Mm-hmm.
It's my treat, like especially after a show, because it's open late, and I get the number one, which is four. I get it with cheese, so it's four cheeseburgers, fries, and a Sprite, and then I add one cheeseburger for the ride home.
Oh yeah.
So
right, you've got the one for sitting down at home in front of the TV.
Yep.
Yep. There's a comic.
Every stage.
Yeah. I usually do a nugget. I do the chicken nuggets that they have. Those are nice.
Well, you should do a chicken ring.
Oh, there you go. Chicken ring.
Get a chicken ring. And then at Thanksgiving, I think that they have the ones with cranberry sauce, like the turkey burger.
They do.
And then sweet potato fries.
Yeah,
wow.
They got new ones. They got a Nashville hot.
Mm-hmm.
They got seafood ones, which I don't know about that, but.
I was a little bit thrown off by how quickly my husband responded to my question. I said, guess what I had another one of last night on my way home? And he goes, let me guess, a McRib. We had one the other night on the air with Michael Palasek. Michael ordered Uber Eats for us and bought a round of McRibs because he and Esmeralda had never tried one before. Michael, I don't think Michael had either. Was that your? No, you had because you knew about the pickle situation.
Yes, I've been very well.
I have never had one. I've never had one.
After the show tonight, you and I are going to go after the show. Yeah, Vince is on numbers 9 and 10. Yes. By the way, he's posting that. He's keeping a tally on Facebook for everyone to see.
By the way, I saw an ad for it, and it was like a McDonald's bus. Some woman, I guess, I'm sure it was fake. She tweeted McDonald's that she was awaiting the McRibs, and then McDonald's had a bus. And showed up with a McRib for her. And I was like, why don't they do that for us? Come on.
Where's that McRib bus?
I love it. I am trying very hard. I couldn't avoid the temptation. Like, I was driving up Ontario, and I had to have another McRib.
So you like it?
Oh, yes. My second one this week. Wow. Second one in 3 days.
Did you guys like it your first time?
I enjoyed it, yeah. It was good. I would say, though, like everyone else, needs more pickles.
Yeah. I you know what's funny? I forgot to ask for that in the drive-thru, and as soon as I got it, they handed me the bag, and I was like, no, I forgot for extra pickles.
You know what they should do? They should just put one of those, just a whole pickle, but a slice.
Yeah, lengthwise.
Done and done.
Right. Michael agrees with that.
Totally. I say smother it in gherkins, and that would be my best bet. So good, though. Very sweet.
I don't know if gherkins would do it. You know what I'll have to do, because I have a jar of gherkins at home. I'll have to buy a McRib and then buy some chicken nuggets, eat those on the way home, and then enjoy the McRib at home.
That's a lot of food.
Exactly.
The gherkins. Yeah,
that's a smorgasbord.
Well, here's how I justify the calorie intake. I don't eat all the fries, and I take off half the bun, so I don't eat all the bread.
You eat it like open face?
Yeah, open
face. You eat a McRib open face?
You look so tortured. You're like,
do you eat the bread then later?
No. I had to you know what I have to do? I have to make sure I throw the bag away immediately.
Oh, like, I do that. That's my fast food move. I just like destroy the evidence.
You got to get rid of it. Well, I can't go back. I can't be digging for the rest of those fries, and I can't go for the rest of the bun.
And I can't have, like, I wake up, I fell asleep on the couch, and I can't have the first image I see is the empty White Castle bag.
Yeah, destroy the evidence. Yep. You're absolutely right about that. There's no reason for regret and remorse. Exactly. It's like leaving in the middle of the night before she wakes up, right, or he wakes up. I'm just saying, like, if you're not there, it didn't happen. That's all I'm saying.
I'm the clean plate club. I have to eat everything.
Everything?
Then I just live with it. I let it just soak in.
Yeah.
And I accept it.
And I go, you know what? That's today. Tomorrow's tomorrow.
Exactly. There you go.
That works as well. Hey, Bob, what's your McRib situation?
Well, I don't know. I eat them once in a great while, only because I know what's in them. Because, you know, like, I don't know if you ever Googled what was in them and stuff.
Ribs?
Why would I do that? It's pressed meat of some sort.
They're delicious smoked ribs.
You live in a world of make-believe, okay. But
it's McDonald's. What do you think it's going to be? Like fairy dust?
It's McRibs.
Yes,
yeah, it's ribs.
Exactly.
My thought is, you know how they came out with, like, a year ago, the Big Mac double XL? Picture this, the Big Mac double XL. Now, that would be good.
That's a lot of crazy right there. That's like four, isn't that four patties?
No. The Big Mac was just, the Big Mac double XL was just a bigger, you know, bigger bun, bigger meat.
I see.
Like they supersized it. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of the sandwiches like they used to have were a lot bigger, and they kept making them smaller and smaller.
Yeah, to make a comparison. Yep.
Yeah, if you have a big McRib sandwich, that would be Yeah, like a double McRib. Like, you know, like, I don't, you know, make the sandwiches bigger.
And then pickles in the middle.
Oh, pickles in the middle is a good. I haven't even had one, but I like that concept. Do you guys remember the triple cheeseburger from McDonald's?
No.
I was a fan.
Bob, do you remember the triple cheeseburger?
I think I do, yeah.
Do you remember the McBLT?
Yeah.
That was a mess. Wasn't that the one where you like had the cold stuff on one side and the burger on the other side, and you're supposed to put it together?
Yeah.
Yeah, the McDLT.
Oh, it was a D? Yeah, why was it called McDLT? So it was
Just a burger with bacon?
Well, but the container was about 5 feet long. That was the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like a buffet station in front of you.
It's a smorgasbord.
It's too complicated. This is too much work.
It's like going to Golden Corral.
Do you guys remember back in the day, Burger King used to have a sandwich called the Whaler, which was the fish sandwich? but it was like this huge fillet of fish that was just really, really, really good.
It was because it was flaky. It was really? More tender than the fillet of fish at McDonald's. Yes.
Yeah, the fillet of fish at McDonald's is very. If you want to get just the sandwich, it's very expensive, and it's like a tiny sandwich. I don't know how they. I don't get the pricing on that thing, but
I've never had one.
Well, because it's caught, it's fish.
Yeah, and they
so it's gonna be a little more expensive.
And they make a killing during Lent when people don't. Want to go to McDonald's, but they're not going to have a burger. That's when they sell more of those things. I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's because of the song.
Oh yeah, Big Mac fillet of fish, quarter pounder French fries.
No, I was gonna say the one. It's that commercial a few years ago where it was the fish that talked.
That was amazing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A fillet of fish.
It was really good.
Give me that.
Okay, you got to. You know what? You have to find that audio, Mike. Oh, yeah. You know what, Bob? Stand by. We're gonna find the audio for that. Have a great night, Bob. Be safe out there. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye. More after this. 312-981-7200. Now, I know someone texted asking about my recipe for chili. I'll do my best, but you will hate me as much as my husband does when we come back on 720 WGN.
It makes me so happy.
You guys all seem very happy.
And it's so
it's coming out of one of those, like, Billy the Basses.
Well, now, have you seen that those bass fishes, they now have fish. I don't have a degree in English. The bass fish, they now have one you can coordinate with your, you can sync. They have a Bluetooth one, so you can have it do your whatever music you have on your shuffle or on your, you can do a Bluetooth bass fish. Coming to you this Christmas. You know you're going to get one, James.
Why is that around?
That's how it's back around. Because you know why? They have warehouses filled with those singing chests.
It's like, what can we do with these?
We put a Bluetooth chip in that, and now...
It's like, Jeff, we doubled down on the fish statues. What do we do with all these? Michael, boxes and boxes full.
Having seen the video of my demonstration of how to use the Bury the Habit coffins... Do you know about this? Okay, everyone can Google Bury the Habit videotape, and you'll see a demo of how to use it. It's a little mini coffin that you're supposed to use, you know, to bury the habit. So let's say you have a spending habit or a smoking habit. You put a representation of that habit into this little coffin, and you close it. And then every time you're tempted, you open it up, and it gives you a reason not to do that again. So
I don't see that working.
I don't know why it didn't take off, to be honest. How did that not like just get on the shelves?
I am honored to have been hired by the creators of that product to be the demonstrator, the very the Price is Right lady with my hand look at this, and this is how you press this button, and
what vice do you have?
Your hand is the one going.
You'll see me. You actually see me. I'm in the video.
Right.
Really? Yeah, it's my voiceover. Yeah. So
is that your hand?
Yeah, it's my hand too.
Closing it.
Closing it and pushing the button and. I think it's on YouTube. Bury the Habit.
It's on Facebook.
Oh my God. Now it is.
It's on their Facebook page.
Is it really?
Yeah. Bury the Habit.
And there's a girl. There's a blonde, younger woman who I think is kind of like the spokes, like the sort of like face of it. But I do the demo video. They were very cool. They were fun to work with. It was a fun afternoon on the set. And
that's cool.
I am the demo girl. So Bury the Habit. Apparently, they have a Facebook page. Have you seen me yet in there? As my
no, I'm watching the whole thing. I like that you are telling people, how to reset it or what's that?
Yeah,
I can't hear the audio.
Yeah, you're holding the button down to record the message.
Right. Oh, okay.
Please, Daddy, I want you to walk me down the aisle.
So, oh my God,
that's amazing.
For quitting smoking, I tapped my younger self because my dad was a big smoker. So
you don't need a car. White Castle cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We are also talking about our late night food runs, fast food runs. Hey, Rich, what do you want to tell us about? Oh, this is something that James brought up. What's up, Rich?
Yeah, hey, this is Trucker Rich.
And hey!
Ever since my surgery, I've been cutting back on food, and you guys are killing me tonight with all this food talk. I'm in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, and there's nothing to eat.
I will say, don't you think, here's what I do, Rich. I Google healthy choices healthiest things. So you can Google it. And so let's say you're driving past a Steak and Shake or past a Taco Bell. There are a lot of websites that will tell you what your healthiest options are. Right. So I think that like at Wendy's, like the chili is actually one of the better choices. And I know it's not your favorite thing, but if you're in a pinch, and I mean, I'm sure you'd love having to bring your 18-wheeler into a parking lot. I mean, that's gotta be a pain. How do you keep it going all night long?
Usually I bring something along with me to eat, but tonight I was gonna run in early so I can get home because the high school out there where I live has got a veterans breakfast in the morning. My grandson invited me to the breakfast tomorrow morning. But I was telling Michael that a couple of years back, they had a Big Mac that was made out of two quarter pounders. So it was like a double quarter pounder Big Mac.
A double Big Mac?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. My God.
A double quarter pounder Big Mac.
See all the things we used to do to ourselves. I mean, the things that we do to ourselves, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you go to Hardee's or Carl's Jr., they got a monster bacon cheeseburger that's 2 third-pound burgers, 4 slices of cheese.
Oh, my God.
I think 6 slices of bacon.
Yeah.
And then the lettuce and tomato.
That's one of those food items when you get it.
Yeah.
And it feels heavy. Like, yeah. You know, like, I shouldn't.
Yeah, like, how is that going to
feel? This shouldn't go in my body.
By the way, for everyone, now that we're talking about burgers, Rich, I don't know if you heard our guests earlier in the week from DMK Burger Bar. When you're in Chicago, I do recommend that. But I did have to cut it in half and take, like, the rest of it home with me. But their turkey burger was outstanding for anyone who's concerned about eating a lot of red meat, just so you know.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And, well, just off the subject, up in Rockford, at a Holiday Inn, there's a, oh man, I can't think of the restaurant now, Hoffman House. They've got a sports bar there.
Yeah.
And they've got a 1 pound after cooking hamburger, and it comes with, what do you want to call them? Onion rings, but they're the shredded onions.
Oh, like the straw.
Oh,
kinda,
I
yeah.
love that yeah, too, a little straws. Crispy. Yep.
And they've got a 1 pound, single 1 pound hot dog chili dog.
What?
And that's maybe once every 2 months splurge, you know. I'll go up and have that, but
oh, I love it. Yeah, exactly. Every once in a while,
yeah.
You know, something that you crave, something you enjoy, as long as you do it in moderation, I think is the key.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's like my doctors have always told me, if you're trying to quit smoking, you throw them away. But if you're trying to lose weight and you got a craving for a candy bar, have one candy bar. The doctor says if you keep putting it off, the craving gets worse and you'll have 3.
Then you binge. Oh, so. That's good. That's life-changing advice.
Doesn't explain why I've had 2 McRibs this week. Hey, Rich, have a wonderful evening. Be safe out there. And I hope you enjoy that breakfast you've got going tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I'm going to try.
All right. Get some rest.
If my stomach don't eat up the steering wheel.
Hey, by the way, Dr. Dingman's going to be back on the air with us in about a little over an hour. I don't know that you might be heading home to bed, but he'll be on in just a little bit.
All right. Hey, you know who I am.
Yes,
I do.
I'm
a cancer survivor.
Yep.
Tell him the last time when he showed up, I was out here in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, where you guys don't come in at. So I was listening to a FM station. And just as I came out of the area where I know I can pick up WGN, the last song I heard was Signs.
Oh!
And the last lyric was, I'm alive and doing fine. And then I switched over to...
Oh, no!
And there was Dr. Dingman.
Oh, my God. That's giving me goosebumps. We'll tune in a little bit later and be safe out there. And if you're still awake, give us a call. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I've had the pleasure of talking a few minutes before we started this interview with the remarkable Robert J. Wagner, who has written his another book. He's written some wonderful books about his memories of Hollywood, the golden era of movies. His newest book is I Loved Her in the Movies, Memories of Hollywood's Legendary Actresses. Robert J. Wagner was in the middle of telling me that Chicago is one of his favorite cities. Tell us, why do you love Chicago so much, sir?
Well, I was born in Detroit.
Okay.
And my family used to go down to Chicago all the time, so I was down there when I was a little boy, and then I came back there when I was under contract to Fox. Their exchange was there, and that's where all the movies went all over the United States from Chicago. And so, you know, I was able to be there then, and then I played in the theater there with Jill, and and whenever we get a chance, we go to Chicago. Love it. Just love it.
Well, then I would have to request politely that next time you are in Chicago, you reach out to us. We would love to have you in studio.
Oh, I'd come in and see you. Head on, Patty.
I love that. And I didn't realize that you were born in Michigan. When did your family move to Los Angeles, to California?
Oh, they moved out there when I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
And I moved out there before then, but we'd go back to Michigan quite often every summer, my sister and I. We'd all go back to Michigan. And I was back there this summer, my son-in-law, Barry Watson. Do you know who he is, a young actor?
I'm not familiar. I'm sure if I looked him up, I would know right away.
He was on Seventh Heaven for years.
Oh, okay.
But he's married to my daughter, Natasha. And he was born up in Traverse City, up in Michigan. And I spent a lot of my youth up there in the peninsula. And so I went up there, and he had leased a cabin, and we all spent about a week together, which was really wonderful to be up on the lakes there. It's just fabulous.
Oh, that sounds magical. Oh, I'm looking him up right now. He was born in Traverse City. Oh, I love that area of Michigan, too. It's beautiful.
Yeah, really great up there.
It is. It's like another planet. It just, it's so lush.
It was wonderful. It brought back such memories to me. I walked into this cabin, and the smells and the lake and the reflections and the woods. I mean, it just brought back such memories. Have you ever had that experience to go back to someplace when you're young?
Well, you know what's funny is that I live about 2 miles north, or no, 2 miles south of where I grew up. So as far as my neighborhood goes, I mean, like, I still kind of drive through and get the chills just thinking of that alley that I played, you know, ball against the wall, or, you know, the parks where I played. But I think you're right, though. There's something about going someplace that's even grander than that. For me, it would be places in Wisconsin where I spent summers, like a Girl Scout camp. So, yes, I think that there's something to that. But I also think, and it sounds as though you're the kind of person that really almost you take mental pictures of experiences, because, you know, people have those moments, but the kinds of stories that you're even sharing now or in your books are more, I don't know, they're more detailed and specific. Do you sense that you kind of take everything in and realize that this is important?
I think so. I think I do, Patty. I think that's a facility that I have. I know, you know, the way I start the book, you know, it's interesting you say that, because, you know, I start the book with Norma Shearer, and I went to school with her son when I was 7 years old, and I didn't know that she was this gigantic movie star and the number one star and playing Marie Antoinette and all of that kind of thing. And I went to their house on a weekend because I was boarding at school, and we went up to see Norma, and I was introduced to her. And she was so wonderful and so nice to me. And she gave me a picture of herself signed to me. And I kept that picture. It's in the book. But I kept that picture in my heart and in my soul and in my treasure chest. You know, so it was an impression. I can remember it like it's almost yesterday. That's interesting that you brought that up. I do have that facility, yeah.
Well, because you open your book talking about, actually, part of that, your story that you just mentioned about Norma Shearer is that, you know, you, first of all, you had a picture of her. I remember my first crush, which was Michael J. Fox. It's the only fan letter I have ever written in my entire life was to Michael J. Fox. But you're, you know, when you talk about not being able to fit the picture of Norma Shearer in your treasure chest because it is too big, but even like remembering, you know, meeting her, and obviously that had to be such a monumental, you know, sort of encounter. Not just those details, but also your sense of what it was like for the women that you worked with, the idea that not only do women have it harder, but that actresses have it harder, and this idea that we're also stronger. Talk a little bit about your take, because you worked with some of the most and had friendships and relationships with the most remarkable women in movie history. I mean, knowing
isn't that amazing? I mean, it's such a I was so blessed.
Yeah, yes.
Know, to meet these women, but you know when being an actor, you know, you put your life out there. You know, if you're doing a scene that's got some depth to it and some, you're trying to make it look like it's real and the first time, and you open yourself up so much. And I saw that so much with these ladies, and I mean, They just were remarkable. They were just remarkable, and that's what this book is about. It's a tribute to them, because they gave up so much to give us what they give us so much, and what they gave us was so great. And here I am, you know, this young guy starting off with a business, and I'm suddenly working with Claudette Colbert and Barbara Stanwyck, and you know, these people that I'd seen on the screen for so long, and it was just so impressionable and so such a gift. It was such a gift given to me, and I worked with some of the most wonderful women, and you know, I just as you said, you know, Scott and I have written a couple of Adquirton 2 books before this. And when we started talking about this, he said to me, you know, that's very interesting that you had the opportunity to be involved with these ladies and what they meant to you. And because I had done my biography with him, Pieces of My Heart, and I'd opened up a lot. You know, I opened up a lot to him of my life and my back life and my feelings about people and all of that that you go through with writing a book. And he said, it's just remarkable that you had these women in your life, and they made such a great impression upon me, and they were with me for so long. Claire Trevor was just such a wonderful woman to me. I mean, she was so great to me and left me something in her will with a note saying, consider this a hug and a kiss. And, you know, they were relationships that were deeply felt. You understand, Patty?
I do indeed, because, one, you pour so much of that into your book. Again, we're talking to Robert J. Wagner, who has written I Loved Her in the Movies. And these are, I mean, the fact that you've written not just this remarkable book and sort of this homage to all the wonderful women who've graced the silver screen. Also, as he mentioned, Pieces of My Heart and You Must Remember This are two other books. I almost wish I had read those first, because it sounds as though you build this crescendo of really, I mean, we all worship in whatever way, and whether or not we should, we worship those images on the screen. And it was different when you were growing up and when you got into the studio system. I know a lot of people might not be familiar with what that means and how your careers were different than modern actors and actresses, the way they carry out their careers. Tell us a little bit about how the studio system had a different effect on your careers.
Well, the studio system was very protective, and as a family, and you felt like you were part of it. And when I went to Fox, I was just a kid, 18 years old, and this dramatic coach took a liking to me and felt that I had some kind of possibility. I was very green. I didn't know anything about acting. They took me in off the street, and I became a part of 20th Century Fox, and I was there for almost 12 years. And I had been scholarshiped to a couple of colleges, but I tell you, I made the right move by being signed at Fox, because that's the greatest education I could have ever had in my life. You know, they sent me all around the world, and they cared about me. You know, the people took time with me, and they watched out for me, and they protected me. And you know, that's
sure.
That doesn't happen anymore. That's not there anymore.
Well,
now it's you know, it's more corporative and more business and more, you know, they didn't roll the dice. They don't roll the dice like they did then.
It's not, but it wasn't that easy to come by one of those contracts either. They might have signed, you know, 20 or 30 young men and women, but you know, there, something had to have caught their attention. I just read that you had your first screen test with a director who perhaps. How did that? Let me ask. How did your first screen test go for your first attempt, your first swing at getting into the?
Well, I guess it went all right. You know, Zanuck ran it.
Yeah.
And he kind of liked it, and this dramatic coach, Helena Sorrell, who was such a wonderful woman, said, would you mind watching it again? And she said, look at that. Do you see that when he does that? Did he see that? Did you do that? And he said, I can see, Helena, that you like him very much. We'll put him under contract. So they put me under contract for $75 a week, and I was in the movies. I couldn't have been more excited than anybody you can imagine. I mean, I was, I was thrilled.
Oh, sure. And you, so we talked a little bit about how you met Norma Shearer when you were very young. By the way, the fact that you went to the Hollywood Military Academy, is that still something that you still wonder, like, how did I end up there? What was the decision process behind that with your parents?
I don't know. I guess it was the school to go to, and my family were moving out of Michigan and going to the West Coast.
Okay.
And they sent me out there, and I boarded there at the school when I was 7 years old.
Man, that had to be sort of a shock, I would think, coming out of Michigan and then the strictness of a military school as opposed to what you might have experienced before. Was it shocking?
It wasn't such a great time in my life. You know, I was
okay.
Not with my folks and not with my sister, and I was in this boarding school and I didn't know what was going on. But you know. It all worked out.
Well, and I think it all is part of that bigger picture. I know I listened to an interview that you really are thankful every single day of the life that you've had. And believe me, I mean, not only are people jealous, I'm sure, not of, you know, the women you talk about in this movie. I, for one, having grown up and absolutely adored the great Fred Astaire, I nearly drove my car off the road when I heard you talking about hanging out with him, being there when he started building his house. And I know that we're talking about the amazing women on the screen, but can you just tell me a little bit about Fred Astaire? What was he like?
I can tell you, he was the most wonderful guy, and his son went to that school too. And I remember Fred Astaire, Patty, picking me up and putting me in his car. I didn't know he was Fred Astaire.
Oh.
I didn't know who Fred Astaire was. I didn't know that he was a big musical star and this great dancer and actor and pardon me, marvelous singer.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea, but he was so warm, so loving, so caring for me. It was just great. And can you imagine? I wound up being in television series with him. He and I were together in It Takes a Thief. I mean,
yeah.
I've just been so blessed by all of these relationships that were so meaningful to me. These women meant so much to me. They were so great. I mean, Betty Davis was just such a wonderful friend and a dear, great, wonderful woman. By the way, there's a wonderful book coming out on her called Miss D and Me.
Okay.
And it's written by Catherine Cermak, who was with her up until she left us.
Okay.
And it's a very wonderful book. Really captures Betty in the true way.
Well, yeah, there's that FX series. Have you watched any of that about Betty Davis and Joan Crawford?
Yeah, I watched that.
Yeah. I watched the first episode and I was like, I don't need this. I don't know. I just wasn't drawn in. But I know a lot of people loved it. But
you know, Patty, they took such liberties,
to make
it work. And a lot of it's just, you know, fantasy. They weren't there.
The thing is, in the beginning of your book, in the introduction, the other thing you talk about is that this book is not about backstabbing or dishing or, you know, telling salacious stories. This really is an honor to the women who were in your career, who were in your life.
Yeah, and they deserve to be honored because they gave up so much to give us all so much. And they were very, very particular and wonderful, loving, caring women. And Fabulous. I was just so honored to be able to write a book about them.
What were your thoughts? And of course, you wrote this book prior to all the horrible stories coming out. And you had to have seen what women went through. You acknowledge it as far as, you know, that women are realistic. They're self-aware. They're also, they have, you know, we kind of take things and we're self-protective. And the horrible stories,
Patty,
yes.
Patty, this has been going on for years.
Right.
You know, not for generations, in every society. This has been going on forever, in business, in medicine, in everything, in every walk of life. But the thing that's so wonderful about this moment is these women stepping forward, which takes a great deal of courage, and telling their stories. And I think it's going to make a tremendous amount of difference, and I hope so, because it's a terrible act, you know?
It is. It is. And I...
It's the worst.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, though, is that having, you know, it seems to me as though, you know, the relationships that you were able to enter in with a lot of these women, whether it was professional or personal, and again, remarkable stories that you have, and both sometimes both professional and romantic, It just seems as though you want better for women, and this is part of why you've written this book. You want us to remember them too. I mean, I don't think many people know who Jean Arthur is, and they, you know, maybe they've seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and they kind of remember the kooky reporter running around, but she was absolutely one of the most talented actresses on the screen.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. She just, I never knew her. I only saw her, but I just always thought she was just so remarkable, such a tremendous personality, and you know, to hang on to that, and in that time, I mean, that was a man's world, you know, to be able to be an individualistic person like that. I mean, Jesus, she really put it out there.
Well, and I do. I love that you weave stories about her and your take on her and other actresses, maybe that you never worked with, like Jean Harlow, who died so young.
She left us so very young, so talented, amazing where she could have possibly gone to. You know that. You know my friend Scott Iman, who is we co-authored these books. You know, he's a tremendous historian, film historian. So. We were able to, he was able to go back into their lives and their careers, and me put a personal touch on top of that, and my involvement with them, with these women. And we both felt the same way. I mean, because, you know, there can't be a leading man without a leading woman.
Correct.
And these women, you know, I mean, they were extraordinary. Joan Blondell, you know, I mean, imagine the career that she had.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, because
I knew her. I knew her, and I worked with her. She was fantastic.
Well, and because she's in some of my Jimmy Cagney is another one of my favorites. And
well, they started off together, yes. As you well know. You know the whole story.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly. Was it Penny Arcade? And Sinner's Holiday, right?
Penny Arcade, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did that on Broadway. They knew the lines. They knew the parts, you know. They knew it all. But, you know, I mean, working with Barbara Stanwyck and knowing her the way that I did, I mean, that was just a gift. That was a gift from God, you know. I mean, it was just, I was just touched by, I just have been so lucky, you know, so fortunate to have been able to meet and work with these women and be a part of their lives, and Claire Trevor was such a great friend of mine, and Betty Davis was a great friend. I was there all to the end of her life, and she was, and I produced a picture with her, and we worked together. She was just such a wonderful, giving, cheerful, funny. She had every emotion you can imagine, you know, and when you feel those, have the privilege of feeling those, I mean, that's a gift. That's a gift.
Well, and her range, I mean, everything that she did. I've always loved the story of the movie that she, because she had wanted, Betty Davis had wanted it to play Scarlett O'Hara. I think that's a pretty famous story.
Yes, uh-huh.
And right. And now I am completely blanking on the black and white movie, the Civil War movie that she made, that Jezebel. Oh, I got it.
Jezebel with Hank Fonda.
It took me a second. Yes, Jezebel, because there's an amazing scene in that movie where she's going to enter. Isn't she wearing a red dress? And even though it's in black and white, it still comes across in everything that she did, because she can convey every emotion. She was absolutely otherworldly.
She was great in that movie. She was really wonderful.
Yeah,
you know, there's a book that's coming out probably maybe tomorrow. Or first of next week, called Hank and Jim.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story that, and Scott Iman, my co-author that we wrote together, he wrote it, and it's the story of Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart and their 50-year relationship. You will love it.
Oh, absolutely!
It's really a wonderful book, and the two of them are really, he really captured them. He got them, believe me.
Well, and they are our actors. I think and maybe I'm just sort of seeing what I want to see when I watch interviews with Henry Fonda or Jimmy Stewart. And Jimmy Stewart, in particular, I would say, in similar ways to you, have this glee about this lucky life that I think people just dream about having. Would you say that that's accurate?
That's a very nice. I'm very pleased to be associated with Jimmy. That's great.
Well, because he always kept his sense of humor. I mean, even going on Johnny Carson, and you know, he would have those poems that he would share.
Oh, wasn't he great at that when he played the piano?
Yes.
Oh, that's a horse, a pretty good horse.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a wonderful man. They were both great. I knew them both. And Scott really, really did a wonderful job on this book. I think you would enjoy it. I would encourage you to get it.
I have to say, we're talking to Robert J. Wagner, and I'm adding the J because it's on the cover. So, I mean, I think people know you as Robert Wagner, but I have to, you know, give them my respect in that you have your title here, Robert J. Wagner. Can we ask what J stands for, by the way?
J stands for John.
John. Robert John Wagner. Now I sound like I'm being too formal.
That is too formal, yeah.
I think that
usually people call me RJ, so please call me RJ.
Oh, well, that's too intense for me. RJ. Yeah, I'm going to have to call you sir, if you don't mind for now. Okay, fine. I'll try RJ.
Good.
I think you're the first author that I've spoken to who's giving me a reading list. So far, we have Misty and me and Hank and Jim, which is coming out soon. And I have to ask, how much time do you spend with Scott Iman, who has written these last three books with you?
Well, we spent quite a bit of time together, and the thing that's been the most positive of all of this collaboration is that we've become very close friends out of it. And I admire him so much. He just is one of the best authors I've ever read. I mean, I just love his stuff. I mean, he did the definitive book, by the way, on John Wayne. Did you get that one?
I have not gotten that one. That one, you know, I might cry the whole time reading that just because my dad was such a huge John Wayne fan. I grew up on all those movies, you know.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. Stagecoach, yeah. Everything from Stagecoach to what's the Quiet Man, of course. The yeah. Shootist, his well, last.
Scott also did the book on John Ford. So your dad has probably read these books.
My father passed away, but I will read them, and because my dad was a kind of guy, and maybe this was like this for you growing up. If John Wayne didn't do it, my dad didn't do it. But if John Wayne did, like, my dad would smoke non-filtered Camels because John Wayne did. My dad wouldn't use a straw. He goes, "You never saw John Wayne using a straw."
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you really enjoy the book a lot, and Scott did a terrific job on that. He really did, and I think we're going to try to do another book. I don't know what it's going to be yet. We've got a couple of ideas, but I enjoyed working with him so much, and it's opened up a whole new career for me in a sense. You know, this writing books, and I just when I met him, we just kind of got along, you know, and it takes us a while to write these books, but they've been responded to in a very positive way, and that's a good feeling, you know, Patty. That's a nice feeling to have, and I always wanted to do this book on these women, and because they were so special and so special in my life, and I just wanted to share that.
And you have done a wonderful tribute to them. Everyone should pick up I Loved Her in the Movies, Memories of Hollywood's Legendary Actresses, and you can also pick up his other books, You Must Remember This, and I'm sorry, what is the third one? I had it in front of me a moment ago, and I hate to get it wrong. The third one is
Pieces of My Heart.
Oh, Pieces of My Heart. You know,
Pieces of My Heart, yeah.
And here's the thing. You know, I'm so glad that you found someone that you can work on and collaborate with these. But it really comes down to having your perspective and such a great story to tell, and being so passionate about all of it is really what comes off the page.
Thank you, Patty. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Very much.
Well, I thank you again. And please, if you're ever in Chicago, you must come visit us in studio. I'll be very hurt if I find out you've been in town.
I thank you very much for having me on the show. And I wish you a very happy happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays. And if I come into Chicago, I'd love to come in the studio and see you head on.
Oh, appreciate that. Well, definitely. I'm counting the days. Next time, if I ever see any promotion for it, I'm gonna make sure I'll show up wherever you are. Then it sounds a little stalkery. Never mind. Well, I'll wait to hear from you.
Okay, Patty. Take care of yourself now.
You too. Thank you, RJ. Again, Robert J. Wagner joining us, and really a privilege. One of my favorite interviews already. Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Happy holidays to you as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. More, you too. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian James Vickery, who is appearing at the Zanies in Rosemont through Saturday. Go to zanies.com for ticket information. And we were chatting a lot during the last few minutes because I loved talking to Robert Wagner, who has been in show business since he was 18 years old. And, you know, has seen a lot, has worked with a lot of tremendous actors. I really am so jealous that he used to hang out with Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
He's got stories about Frank Sinatra.
FS.
FS. He calls him FS. Great. And I was hesitant to ask him about the recent stories in Hollywood in regards to Harvey Weinstein and Weinstein. Yeah, Weinstein. You know, I was telling a colleague of mine, they corrected me, and I said, well, I mean, I'm used to it. I people call me Vasquez. Right. And he goes, no one calls you Vasquez. That's ridiculous. And his producer turned around very slowly in her swivel chair, and she goes, you called her that last week on the air.
I have heard people call you that.
Yes. It does make me flinch when I hear Vasquez. So mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein. I want to make sure I get that correct.
Yes.
I was hesitant to ask Robert J. Wagner about his impressions of that because I was a little bit concerned that he would be like, oh, you know, I don't know what I thought he was going to say.
Yeah.
But the fact that he said that he was impressed by how brave women are to come forward and tell their stories and he hopes that it will change I was relieved
That's
by that.
Great. Yeah.
Because you and I have been, I guess you call this show business, doing radio, doing social media, doing stand-up comedy. You were telling me a story about watching a stand-up comic on stage telling jokes, and I wonder if audiences are going to change in their reception of certain material.
Well, there was a comedian I saw recently. I won't say who or where, but I just got and I didn't have any other information going in. Just watching what I saw on stage, I started to cringe. Like, it just felt inappropriate. It's like, this is not... I pictured my wife, Kristen, in the audience, and she's like, I thought she would hate this guy. And sure enough, some women did leave during the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there
you
go. I
mentioned that when we were talking about it, but yeah.
Well, someone asked me today if I thought maybe things are worse than they were 30 years ago. And maybe stand-up comedy is a little bit of a reflection of that. So, in one sense, I do appreciate how there is a lot of freedom. You know, there are people who say, well, if I use the R word, here's why I use the R word or the C word or the N word and come up with these sort of elaborate explanations. And one of those people happens to be Louis C.K., who has an entire bit about why he calls someone a diminishing word when it comes to being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And is, again, very elaborate. And when you have to go to that extent of why it should be okay for me to be hurtful or offensive or to, when we talk about this place of power, Louis C.K. is one of those guys, especially because he's become so successful. I have worked with Louis C.K. many times, many, 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 many times. I worked with him in the 90s and then again picked up opening for him in the 2000s. And I won't go into any details, but I will say, fortunately for me, I was never a victim of one of his sexual onslaughts. I will call it that because what is coming out today is gross. And I do not doubt the stories at all. I've never doubted them. They've been around for years.
Yep.
And this is the weird thing about stand-up comedy. And maybe this happens in other workplaces where we knew about Cosby before Hannibal really made that story go viral. It was a story amongst comics. And I remember being here on a Sunday night, the weekend that the story about Bill Cosby was exploding. And we were getting all kinds of messages about don't be the judge and jury. You know, how dare you? Because it was hard to, you know, somebody who is rather iconic in television and comedy history. But I knew what I knew of him. You and I've had professional relationships with comics. And when stories come out, you're like, yeah, I can see that.
Exactly.
With Louis C.K., I will tell you that I have had gross exchanges with him. fortunately for me, they've never been. Well, it's like if it's gross, it's gross. It has not been sexual in nature. I will say that there are comics who I've worked with who have pulled out their penises because they think it's funny. Mm-hmm. And like we're just supposed to stand there and go, oh, look, you have your penis in your hand now. And we're all just standing here uncomfortably. You and I were talking about how I'd rather talk about the wonderful comics who are high mm-hmm. profile and are good people. I would give you a list of the great comics who have been nothing but professional with me. And at the very top of my list would be Lewis Black. I would say Jake Johansson, who you were working with
yes,
on Saturday.
He'll be there Saturday. And I agree.
Yeah. Oh, tremendous human being. Kathleen Madigan.
Oh, my God. I
comedian.
Love Kathleen Madigan.
She was just on stage tonight with Michael Palasak, also another great human being yes. and comic. I would say that Brian Regan, a tremendous human being, funny comic.
Never met him, but I know someone who
so
tours with him and said the same thing.
Who tours with him?
Jackie Cation.
Oh, my gosh, she does?
Yeah.
I'm sometimes. So jealous.
I know.
All right. Too. Oh, my mm-hmm. God. I didn't know that.
She said the one thing he has is, I don't feel like this is a bad thing to reveal because I totally agree, is that he just, like the water bottle, like obviously these are for big shows. I mean, you're talking thousands of people.
Sure.
If there's water bottle, like the cap is off. And when I heard that, I was like, of course, because I've been on stage before where you're trying to like wrestle with getting the cap
yeah.
off the water bottle.
She doesn't like that it's off?
He wants to make sure it's off.
You have to make sure it's off.
You have to make sure it's off. Exactly. That's what I mean. When I heard that, I was like, of course. Like, that's the only thing.
Well, when I'm at, like, I actually prefer a glass with a straw.
Oh,
because absolutely. Then it's easier to take a yep. sip while you're on stage. These are weird inside. This is totally
this is really
inside
detail.
Baseball. Yeah,
but it is hard because like that big.
But
pause.
He has it in a rider. What you're saying is Jackie's noticed that he has a rider that says the cap must be off the water bottle
yeah.
when it's placed.
And maybe
on
it's
stage.
Not. I don't even know. Maybe it is or it
isn't.
It
has
but,
to be.
But I know it's one thing that he.
Yeah.
Is I and I would be too.
He is one of the funniest human beings.
I love him so much.
Oh
like,
my God, he's funny.
He's like. He's one of the cleanest comedians of all time, too.
And prolific. Just, always new yes. material. It makes me a little angry.
I know. And he is just he's just so funny.
Yeah.
So
tremendous human being. Actually, last night on Stephen Colbert, one of Chicago's very own, Pat McGann.
Another good one.
Killing it. Did a great job and a tremendous human being.
He and him both did our Odd Job show that we did.
Oh, I didn't know Pat did that yep. as well. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I'm trying to think of other high-profile comedians. I've worked with so many. No, not him. He's horrible.
Yep.
Not him either. He's horrible, too.
By the way, I will say, for you and I, without any, just our horrible list is like the exact same.
We'll talk about that off the air. I have
yeah,
more.
Yeah, of course.
And oddly enough, it was actually someone who starred, a co-starred in the Kaiser Soze movie was another comedian. Oh, you know what? I may as well just say. Kevin Pollak is unpleasant. Not mm-hmm. sexually aggressive or anything, but just unpleasant to the people around him, I
yeah.
would say. Yeah. Just, it was unfortunate. I was really surprised by it.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that too, actually.
And Bobby Slayton, I was only going to say nice things about people, but I went the other way. I went the other way. Bobby Slayton had the club cutting my time down because he didn't like my material.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'll never forget because I was just I was such a new comic. Here's how long ago it was. I was doing material about Jesse Helms being a sexist, racist, homophobic tumor on the face of America. That was like one of my yeah. things. And he started having Jesse Helms had talked about why women don't belong in the military and don't belong in combat. And he was saying that, well, you want a woman in a foxhole with you with her sanitary products.
Oh my gosh.
And he actually did this. There was a speech he gave about like about women having to douche in a foxhole. And I had this joke about like, you know, if I'm in a foxhole with bombs going on over my head, I'm not going to turn to my yeah. to someone next to me and go, hey, Sarge, what do you think? Vinegar and water yeah. or and audiences were just sort of it was uncomfortable for them. Mm-hmm. And I could just hear him laugh. And the next day I went from having 25 minutes to 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And then we were in the green room and he goes, someone said, so you were with Patty all week. Have you had a good week? And he goes, well, I don't know if she's funny, but she's got nice games.
Oh my gosh.
And that was that was my experience with him. I've actually run into him since and he seems much nicer. I think people can. Here's the other thing. I think people can get better. I think but given a lot of permission and a lot of silent permission, I think they can get worse.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
It is good to know people can get better.
People can get better. People can get better. I don't know what's going to happen with the whole Louis C.K. situation. It's icky. And
I have to be honest, this is one of the first ones of these stories. And again, like you just said, I've heard these rumors for years.
And for those who aren't familiar, there have been stories for years that Louis C.K., when traveling with comics or at festivals with stand-up female comedians, has invited them to his room or in various situations actually asked if he could relieve, he could not relieve himself, that sounds like he's going to the bathroom, but if he could pleasure himself in front of them.
Yeah.
And without notice, with two women at a festival, took all of his clothes off and started pleasing himself in front of them.
I saw those two women, too, by the way, do their act. They did sketches at I.O. around that time. The show they were doing for that festival, I saw them do at I.O.
Yeah.
They were very funny. But, yeah, it's that particular thing is so weird to me. And what this is one of the first ones, like, I would have said for a long time he was one of my favorite comedians of all time. You know, and it's like I... It's a tough one artistically.
I know. Well, and I felt the same way. When I started doing stand-up comedy, Bill Cosby was one of my favorites. And the reason I stopped liking him, and this is long before the allegations came out, I stopped liking him when I heard stories from friends of mine who were black comics who would come across, you know, cross paths with him professionally, and he would tell them, he would be very condescending, patronizing, and cruel to them about their material and about their careers.
Eddie Murphy, Raw.
Yeah, yeah.
He talks about it in Raw.
And that's what would happen to a lot of other comics. And I was like, who does he... I mean, I get that he's that guy, but George Carlin never did that. George, right. Do your thing.
Do your thing. Let other people do their thing.
Yeah, let them succeed or fail. If they ask you for advice, you know, no. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me as a sidecar tonight is comedian James Vickery, who is appearing at Zany's in Rosemont all weekend. He's going to be there tomorrow night, Friday night, with Mike Toomey, and then Saturday night with the one and only Jake Johansson. Also, Mike Toomey is also the one and only.
Yeah.
That was sort of a weird distinction. They're both incredible. And James Vickery, also an incredible comedian. Go to zanies.com for more ticket information. Who's hosting this week?
It is Mike Preston.
Oh, I love that. I'm sorry. I just got very excited about that show. I made the head out there on Saturday night and hang out
really
with you.
It's really fun. Yeah.
I think I'm going to come to that. I'm going to see if I can get tickets because Jake probably sells out.
I think he does sell out.
All right, then fine. I'm kind of excited because I don't think you've ever been on the line with Dr. Lars Dingman. Dr. Lars Dingman, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, Patty. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you for asking. We're thrilled to have you on tonight. I know that you were caught up with other business last night, and our listeners have already started calling in for readings. Dr. Dingman is the world-renowned iTunes psychic, and by learning what the last three songs that you randomly heard, he can do a reading for you based on that and can give you some insight into what's going on in your life, what's going to happen, and perhaps a past life reading. Is that accurate?
Those are always fun. I did a show here in Los Angeles in Burbank earlier this week, and I had a cat lady on stage with me, and it turns out she was a dog in her past life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. The karma always balances out.
Irony.
I put the it's crazy. The universe is always in balance. She was a pip, as they used to say.
Pip. I kind of love that. I feel like that's from your like three lives ago for you. What a pip.
Sometimes the language pops in and out. I was speaking in Victorian verse the other day.
Really? Victorian verse? Can you
no,
use
I'm
it? All right. Then. I was going to ask for a sample of that. Well, Lisa has been patiently holding on the line for a reading. Hey, Lisa, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Patty?
Oh.
You just always make me want to be a better woman.
Well,
you are so unbelievable.
Oh, that's so kind of you, Lisa. But here's the thing. Like, everyone I encounter makes me want to strive for better as well. So right back at you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You both want to make me want to be a better woman.
Well, you should be a better woman because that's really what's lacking in this world. Is men not being good enough women. Lisa, can you tell Dr. Dingman what year
Dr.
last
Dingman,
three
times? It is such an honor. It is such an honor.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Have you heard the program before?
Yes, actually, I was waiting last night, and then I guess you weren't on. So
yeah, I was glad. I was
tonight.
Very not feeling well at all. I was ill, and I was caught in another thing. It was I've been coughing my brains out, but I'm feeling much better today. So all you have to do is tell me what were the last three songs that you randomly heard, and we'll get started.
Okay. My Love Opens the Door by Pete Townsend.
Okay.
Memphis by Tom T. Hall. And Willie Nelson, I was talking with Mike, your producer. Maybe I Should Love You More.
Oh.
I'm not really sure the title of.
Oh, I know that Willie Nelson song. Maybe I didn't love you.
You were always on my mind.
You were always on my mind.
Okay, there you go. Always on my mind. And what was the middle song?
Memphis by Tom T. Hall.
Memphis.
Memphis.
Oh, Memphis. Okay. Memphis, the city Memphis. Well, this is
correct.
Okay, Lisa. So we've got My Love Opens the Door by Townsend, You Were Always on My Mind by Willie Nelson, and Memphis by Tom T. Hall. Let's see. I'm seeing that your heart is hurting here, Lisa. Have you had some romantic strife or pain in your life the last six months, six weeks, something like that?
6 years.
6 years. Okay. You lost someone.
No. Well, as far as love goes, it was a 5-year divorce. So, yeah, that's about right.
Okay. The divorce took 5 years to actually go through? Well, you were together for 6 years, and then you had a divorce.
Oh, no. 6 years is when it started, a year before it happened. No, we were together for 25 years.
Oh, okay. I see. And then the last 6 years is when the problems began. Yeah, that's what I'm – this is – and it's – even though it's 5 years, 6 years ago, it's still – it's the first thing you think of every day when you wake up.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. That's what these songs are, you know, obviously you were always on my mind. You're still on my mind. Memphis, is the, one of the birthplaces of, blues music and soul, and the Memphis, the Delta, the Mississippi River Delta area is a very fertile area for agriculture and music, and the meaning here is you have so much to give, so much love, and it's being trampled on, right? You're not you want to open the door with your love, but it's this relationship, you can't get past it. True or false?
I'm in prison. I feel like I'm in prison. I mean, not literally, but.
Yeah, okay. And this is the reason was there a I'm seeing was there an infidelity that caused the divorce ultimately or initially?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was more than one of you, right?
It was just him many times. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a crowd scene in a movie. Is what I'm seeing. Many times I see. Okay. So here's what's happening, Lisa. The universe knows you're hurting, right? Universe sees that you're in pain, feels that you're in pain. You're waking up every day. You just said like you're in prison. Like you're in the jailhouse, and it's time for that to be over. These three songs is the universe reaching out and telling you to, you know what, enough is enough. You need to let the love that you have inside you still open the door to the rest of your life. And living in the past and having these feelings that are affecting you day to day, it's not a good thing. For you, for your happiness and for your growth as a human being, which is why we're all here. I mean, that makes sense to you, right?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
The prison door is closed to my future, which I don't see, my future of happiness.
Right.
I can't visualize.
Yeah, that's not what you want, is it?
No.
Right, but you want to be happy.
I desperately.
Okay. Well, that's why you called, and that's why I can help you. All right? Here's what we're going to do. First of all, you got to realize that this guy, Brad, David, I'm seeing a Brad or a David. Was he a plumber? Was he a tradesman of some kind?
No, Joe, and he's a narcissistic sociopath.
I didn't know that was a job description. That's fantastic.
So specific. Yeah.
Yeah, very specific.
I did that part-time for you, Summer.
Yeah, they're raising the minimum wage on that, by the way. Yeah, it comes with a free mirror.
There seems to be a lot of them hopping up in the news.
Yeah. Okay, so you had 25 decent years and then 5 years of total crap. And here's what the universe is saying. Get over it, Lisa. He's not worth it.
It's so hard.
Okay. Well, you have a choice here.
And I'm not even in love with him, and he just is there.
Okay, Lisa.
I don't know.
Again, this is the universe talking, not me. Understand that, first of all. These are the songs that the universe is throwing in your face. And the universe is saying you're wasting your life. Think about that sentence. You are wasting every minute that you live. Is one less minute that you're going to be alive in this lifetime, right?
Yes.
Okay. Up to now, you've wasted 5 years pining over a guy that wasn't worth the heartache. He did not respect you. He did not cherish you. He did not love you. And as hard as those words are to hear, it's the truth, right?
It is absolutely the truth.
Okay, and you are not a worthless human being. You have love locked inside you, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you've got a choice.
Abundance.
Okay, you can keep that abundant love locked inside you until you're old and cranky and all by yourself, or you could say, enough with this bastard, I'm done with him. And understand, give yourself... It really boils down to self-esteem and understanding that you are worth more. You deserve better than the way this guy treated you. I'm literally, what happens, I get these song titles and I see pictures and videos in my head. And I'm seeing a crowd scene from a movie. So it was not just one infidelity. That was a lot, right?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you care? Why do you care? Well, how can you still have warm feelings for someone that
it's
you
not
time and time again?
Warm feelings. It's just anger.
Okay. And rightful.
Betrayal.
It's rightful anger. Okay.
Betrayal.
Yes.
Abandonment.
Right. Okay. Those are all valid emotions, right?
Those are my feelings. Yes.
Okay. And you know what? You've had him for 5 years. Now, mentally, put him in a box, put some cement in him, and throw him in Lake Michigan and let him sink to the bottom so that you can swim.
Ooh.
Can I put his shoes in the box of cement?
Yeah.
Yes, you can do that. Yeah. Now, you wouldn't be the first, I'm sure, in Lake Michigan to do that. It's time for you. The universe is saying it's time for you to step out. And be that vivacious broad you once were and go out and take a big bite out of life again.
I know.
All right, here's how we're going to do an exercise with you, Lisa.
Okay.
Who is the sexiest woman you've ever seen?
Sexiest woman.
Like Sophia Loren or...
Yeah, Sophia Loren, Rita Moreno, Ava Gardner.
Sophia Vergara.
Someone high.
Oh, Sophia Vergara.
Oh, that's a good one.
Nice.
Sophia Vergara.
She has a sense of humor and...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And she's all that and more.
Okay. She has a certain energy in her, a certain vibration. The entire universe works on vibration. Sophia Vergara has that Sophia Vergara vibration, and that is what attracts people to her. Lisa, right now, your vibration is self-defeating, low, and steeped in misery because someone did something bad to you. The only thing worse than that is for you to keep allowing it to hurt you. And honestly, the fix to this is so simple, it's ridiculous. You just have to decide that you're tired of being miserable. And the minute you decide that, intellectually, you won't be miserable anymore. So what we have to do to get you to that point is raise your vibration. And we do that by increasing the energy in your chakras. Where are you right now? Are you in your home or you're out at work? What are you doing?
I'm in my home.
Okay. I need you to stand up.
Okay.
Okay.
Standing up.
And then I want you to start with a low voice and work to a higher pitch, and I want you to laugh. Laugh like you've never laughed before, and not BS laugh, actual laugh. Think of something that is delightful. Think of something funny. Think of something ridiculous. Picture it in your mind, and I want to hear you go, a laugh like that, okay? All right, let me hear it. One, two, three, go.
Higher pitch, I don't know if I can do. It's a genuine laugh. I was watching a show tonight, which was hysterical.
Okay, good. I need more, Lisa. More like you're gonna wet your pants laughter.
You can't breathe and your stomach hurts.
Exactly.
Oh, it is the best medicine.
I want you to wake up the people around you and have them think that there's something wrong with you, that you're laughing so loudly.
There would be a pleasant change.
Okay.
Yes.
That was pretty good. We're going to do it one more time. And what I want you to do is every morning when you wake up, because what's happening now every day when you wake up is that first thought in your mind is, oh, I'm alone. Oh, he broke my heart. Oh, I'm in misery. I'm in jail. He's always on my mind. That's the first thing that comes into your mind every day, true or false?
True, but it's anger, hatred, and...
Okay. Here's what we're going to do. Every time... Okay. His name was Joe, right?
Correct.
Okay. Every time you think of Joe, I want you to laugh at his silly, sorry ass.
Yes! I love this. This is amazing.
Oh, my God. This is like... Wow.
Yeah.
Was he gorgeous? Was he handsome? What was his worst physical attribute?
Worst physical attribute?
Yeah.
His stomach was your belly.
He had a big fat belly, like a clown.
Lisa, does it help if we all laugh at his big fat belly?
Going over Niagara Falls.
Lisa, does it help if
him in a Speedo?
Yes. I don't want to imagine him in a Speedo. Does it help if we all laugh and point at that beer belly?
Yes. On the count of three, I would like everyone to laugh. Picture Joe in a yellow Speedo with his big, hairy belly.
Michael, you too, by the way. Get your mic on. Big, hairy belly, yellow Speedo.
He's walking down Michigan Avenue. He's walking down Michigan Avenue, and every hot woman around is pointing at him and laughing. Because not only is he in a yellow Speedo with a big beer belly, but he's got toilet paper stuck to his foot. All right, let me hear that laugh. 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, my God.
Oh. He's a big, fat, stupid ass is what he is.
Oh, my God. That's the understanding.
So every time now, Lisa, every time he pops into your head, the reaction is no longer going to be hate and misery. It's going to be, what a fool.
What
a bikini-wearing, pot-bellied, toilet-paper-dragging jag-off he is.
Oh, you said jag-off. I love that.
I know.
It's a good word.
It's a good one.
That's a good word. And boy,
that's a good one.
Yeah, honest to God, right?
Oh, you got that, Lisa?
I do.
Can
my
you do
God.
It?
All these years in therapy, and look what happens. 5 minutes on the phone, and I'm cured.
Well, I want to hear you call back and laugh again with us, Lisa. We have to hear back from you.
Patty,
Lisa, follow me.
And...
Thank you.
Thank you. I want you to follow me on the social media. Go to my Facebook page. And I, as the weeks go by, I want to hear from you. Tell me how this is working, because I guarantee you what you're doing here is you are, what happens is every day he pops into your head and it lowers your vibration and it depresses your frequency. By laughing, you are mechanically and completely raising your frequency. And the more you do it, the easier it will become. And in 2 weeks or so, you'll welcome the thoughts of him because it'll fill you with delight. And what that will do is it will begin to attract other people, other potential mates into your orbit, and you will become exponentially happier. All right? And this is something
like
you control.
I know I'm putting out a bad vibe all around me. It's
of course. I can hear it.
Yeah. I know that it's a bad aura. And I need to.
And listen to what you just said, Lisa. You said, I'm putting off a bad vibe, which is true. But since you're putting out a bad vibe, you can just as easily put out a good vibe, and the results are completely different. And you have the power to do that, and now you have the visual image of this fat jagoff walking down the street with toilet paper stuck to his foot.
And now we all do. Lisa, go take care of that and touch back with us in a few weeks. Let us know how it's going. We've got to take a break here. What a remarkable reading. Everyone can jump in. We've got a couple people on the line on hold. More with Dr. Lars Dingman when we come back on 720 WGN. You were always on. This is one of my favorite songs.
It's amazing. It's a beautiful song.
This was, even though, I feel like the last segment was very cathartic for Lisa, and perhaps this is a song that might have been holding her back, but I think that she should be able to laugh at her ex-husband. That was a tremendous reading by Dr. Lars Dingman, the world-renowned iTunes psychic. Dr. Dingman, how do you feel about that reading? Do you have, like, certain, you know, after a reading, are there certain emotions that you go through to sort of come down or try to, like, unfold yourself after something like that?
Yeah, you know, Patty, I'm being used by the universe as a, like, almost like a translator, because all this information is available to everyone. People go through their lives every day, and they hear random music. Very few people stop to think, geez, maybe these are messages, coded messages coming to me. So what I feel is I'm able to decode them for people and show them, you know, the songs that Lisa had. To me, it's like spray painting on a big white wall with black paint. You're always on my mind. My love opens the door, and the Memphis, the Fertile Crescent of Memphis down there. So it's very clear to me, and it always makes me laugh that people don't get it until I show it to them. And then, like Lisa did, they're like, oh, of course, yes. How could I not have seen that? So it tickles me in that way. Also, her ex-husband sounds like such a incredible loser. It brings me much delight to mock him on 50,000 watts.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I was enjoyable. Yeah, all of that. Well, we have more listeners who are on hold waiting for a reading for you. And Susan has been on hold for quite a while. Hi, Susan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. I just want to say something to Lisa. She should put on her red dress and dance the blues away.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Susan. I agree with all that. Her ex and his yellow Speedo.
Susan, well done.
Yes.
I'm really glad to talk to you, Dr. Dingman. And, of course, Patty, because I listen to you about every night.
Oh, thank you so much.
My first song is by the big hair band Cinderella.
Ooh.
It's Nobody's Fool.
Okay.
And then my next one is Double Vision by Foreigner.
Oh.
And my last one is also by Foreigner, and it's I Want to Know Where Love Is.
Oh, I don't know why I love that one so much. Michael, I'm going to need that one in a little bit too. A little bit of a bed. Foreigner, I know what.
That's a great song.
Okay, Susan, so your songs are Nobody's Fool, Double Vision, and I Want to Know Where Love Is.
Correct.
Okay. It sounds like you're having romantic issues as well. True or false?
No. It's actually, no. I have a very wonderful husband, but I'm having more like family.
Family, a love relationship, a family relationship. There's Schmilkes and trouble in there, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not your life mate, but someone that you are related to. That's the nobody's fool. You feel like you are being taken advantage of by someone in your family. True or false?
True.
Yeah. The double vision, you feel that a double standard is being applied to you and to other people. You're being held to a higher, tougher standard, and you're being a little manipulated, but mostly used compared to other people in the family.
Yes, exactly. That's what I told my mom today on the phone. It's not about my mom, though.
Right, and you want to know where love is. You're being pushed around and manipulated by people in your family, and you're asking yourself every day, where's the love that's supposed to exist in the family? True or false?
True.
Is this about money? I'm feeling green. Is it like an inheritance or some sort of money issue that's happening?
Well, that's part of it. More it's emotional abuse by it's actually a brother of mine, and it's been going on for years and years and years, and I did the opposite of laughing. I did the primal scream because I had all I could take, and I've been really feeling I've been digging my way back up out of it, you know, just
right. Well, and even the primal scream, you know, it's interesting that you say that. The reason that that came into vogue decades ago in the psychological world was because, again, it's changing your vibration. Anytime, you know, sound is a vibration, light is a vibration. Anytime that you rock your body with something completely different, well, you're literally trying to change your mojo, try to change your vibration. And that's, I believe, a very large reason that the primal scream was successful when it was successful. You know, the psychologists thought it was for some deep Freudian reason, but the truth is it was physically shaking the body and changing the vibration, and therefore changing what is attracted to the person. And that is kind of what you need. But for you, the primal screaming, I think, is more disruptive than helpful. Would you agree?
Yeah, because I was really shook up for a few days, and I actually damaged my voice box a little.
Yeah.
I didn't. It was bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing it. You know, you the idea was good, but the execution harmed you, and that you don't need to do that in order to live your life the right way. So these three songs, pointing to the family, pointing to a trouble there, the double vision, the double standard. It's not fair. But you know what? Susan, life isn't fair, and none of us should expect it to be fair. It's nice when it's equitable, but life isn't fair, and I think a lot of times people get all bent out of shape because something unfair happened to them, or they got some bad luck or whatever you want to describe it as. And you know, that's the way it is, and life happens to us. Our character and our happiness depends on how we react to it. You know, I've seen people literally with no legs in a wheelchair whistling and happy, helping other people at a food kitchen or something. And I've seen rich people on their yachts, miserable, crappy human beings. So it's life, and this earth is a classroom. You know, our souls, our body, our essences come here, and we're supposed to learn lessons and move closer towards perfection. No one ever gets there, obviously, but we're supposed to be happy. That's the only goal here, is teaching yourself how to be happy regardless of what happens to you. And I think that's what the universe here is saying to you. You've got some stuff in your family that's not going well. It's been a long time coming. Your siblings are giving you crap. And is it fair? No. Is it true? Yeah, unfortunately it is. So again, like Lisa before you, you've got a choice in how you react to it. And I think with these songs here, the universe is saying, don't be nobody's fool.
That's what I've called it today, too. I Well, it's a really bad event happened like 43 years ago, and it was very traumatic to me. And my brother took the side of the person that did this bad thing. And then he keeps bringing it up to me and telling me it was my fault. So, and okay. It was very hard. And it's just like, I had to make a choice of just not talking to him on the phone anymore and not,
right.
not talking okay. to him anymore.
Okay. Well, something bad was done to you. It can't be your fault if someone else is doing something to you. So that's that's a false statement, right? It was not your fault, A, correct?
Right.
Okay, B, it was 43 years ago. So
yeah,
again,
it was 43 years ago, but I've been over it, but he keeps picking the scab off.
Okay, well, that's unkind, and it's BS, and anyone that would do that to you, it doesn't deserve your time. Again, you've got to move on, and you have to bring more silliness and more life into your life. I'm getting a past life coming through for you. You were a trail horse. Yeah, a trail, not like a wild running maverick, but you were like a horse that gave rides to children in a past life.
Okay.
Are you a creature of habit in this life? Are you comfortable when you're doing things repetitively over and over again?
Like gardening and yes, and reading.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what that is. That's a remnant of your past life as a trail horse, and it brings you comfort to work in the dirt and have a prescribed manner of what you're going to do and a routine. Is the word I'm looking for, routine. And that is good for you. And what you're doing, you've been caught in this routine of letting your brother bum you out, as the kids say today.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Okay, well, there's a very complicated way to fix that. You know what it is?
Let him go. That's the only thing I can think of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was being sarcastic with complicated.
Well, it can get kind of complicated because my mother's elderly, and that's the complicated part. And I just had to told her that she wants to tell me how he's doing. She can do that. And otherwise,
all right, well, so you listen to her, but you don't have to have a relationship with him if he doesn't respect you enough to not continually bring up something that happened almost 50 years ago. You know what?
Yeah.
He's got a problem with you, and it's not your fault, and I wouldn't worry about it. You need to move on. It's easy to say, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I needed to hear. So
okay. Well, and if it's you know, unless you're some evil person and you're lying to us all right now on the radio,
no.
I wouldn't worry about it. I have to ask now, are you an evil person, Susan?
I'm kind of the life of the party, so people fight me over to have free wine and... Yep.
Okay.
And I don't need the negativity.
Okay. I'm sensing that you do have this energy in you. What we're going to do is exercise with you. And I do a lot of vocal exercises because we're on the radio. When I do live shows in person or face-to-face, I'm able to do more physical things, but that doesn't obviously work on the radio. So what I want to do for you right now is to work a vocal exercise that will raise your vibration and bring in more whimsy into your life that will allow you to deflect this negativity, okay?
Okay.
Do you remember a show on public television called Sesame Street? It was with puppets and people.
I love Sesame Street.
Okay. One of the best songs they ever had on Sesame Street was called Mana Mana. You know the song I'm talking about?
I absolutely know that song, yes. My daughter had the videos to all that, yes.
Great. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to sing that right now. And you're going to do it every morning, the first thing when you wake up.
Oh, my goodness, that sounds great.
And if, perchance, in the future, your brother calls you on the phone, you got the caller ID on your house phone there? Okay.
Yep.
You pick up the phone, and instead of saying hello, is his name Gary?
No, it's Bill.
Bill, okay.
sing him the Mana Mana song, and you don't say any other words. You just sing the Mana Mana on and on and on until he hangs up.
I love it. Okay? I can hear it in my head. Do it. Do it, Susan.
Yes.
Now, with all this energy that you can put into it. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Mana Mana.
Yes! She's got it. More after this on 720 WGN.